We'll give our time now to Brother Sim, and after that, maybe we'll just have a song, and then there will be a few announcements regarding the meal. So.
I've certainly enjoyed being with you this morning in the Sunday school and the discussion and just the worship together. It's been a tremendous blessing. They say that a speaker should express himself and be clear exactly how he feels. And I thought I would just tell you I'm nervous this morning, and I don't know why. I'm not scared of anybody here. So far, everybody I met is a good friend, and I don't know why I feel a real nervousness. Maybe it's because of my inadequacy to speak on the subject. I was blessed by that song we sang this morning, 402, and I thought I would just mention the verse that we omitted. Lead us, O Father, in the paths of right. Blindly we stumble when we walk alone, involved in shadows of a darksome night. Only with Thee we journey safely on. We need God so much. And the path that we're walking on, raising our families, we're in a dark world. And I think I've mentioned before about the differences in the last 50 years. And some of the changes have affected us. They have a conditioning effect on us. And it's one of my burdens this morning. And even yesterday, there was maybe out here west, it's you don't think about things back east, but yesterday was the 50th anniversary for the march. It was called Bloody Sunday, March the 7th, 1965. Is when the blacks were marching across the Edmund Pettus Bridge in Selma, Alabama, and they were beat back, and it was blood, and it really came to national attention. It was one of the big things that that started to change in the civil rights movement. And yesterday, the President of the United States was there, and he talked about the progress that has been made. And he went back to 30 years, and I'm not sure why he didn't go to 50. That's more my frame of reference, and that's what I still remember, the Bloody Sunday and that time period and the rioting, and I thought it never would quit. But he touched on the progress that has been made in the last 30 years. And he talked about the woman that 30 years ago would never have risen over the secretarial pool. Now she can be the CEO. And he said about how much easier the gay man has it to be out and to lift his head high and being a proud American over what he had 30 years ago. And that's supposed to be progress. And all that somehow affects we're walking in a darksome night. And I think it does have an influence on us. And the concept in the world today on family and child training. I wanted to speak on child training this morning. Or I didn't really know to call it child training or parent training. So you can put either one. We'll be okay. But I feel I don't think there's many people that feel comfortable speaking on the subject. I was talking to Steve about it, and I said, really, we probably ought to have our young people that don't have children to tell us about it, because once you have children and you're like, I can't tell anybody how, and once your children are grown, you say, I've made so many mistakes, I can't talk about it and tell anybody. So a lot of times we have a lot of good idealism from young people. So maybe we ought to just be listening to you. But somehow, if you can bear with me, We may differ on some practical areas, but we should be united on the goal. And I would challenge you young people that don't have children to be establishing some goals for when it's your turn to have the little babies on your lap and they're crying and you don't know what to do with them and they throw a fit and you're not sure which way to turn. So you can listen and establish some goals. I think it helps us to get a burden for it. And before I forget it, I want to just mention that you did put the paper on the board. Okay, on the bulletin board on either side is a paper. And one thing that it has, a number of you have asked about if you want to send money to the children's home that I talked about the other night, where to do that. There's an address on the paper. The other thing that's on the paper are three books, the names and authors of three books that I think are very good. Probably be top on my list of recommendations if you're challenged and stirred where you want a little more. The one of them is Parenting by the Book by John Roseman. You may have heard of that one. He would be a man about my age. He was a psychiatrist, and he saw that it wasn't working. What he was recommending was not working. I think he practiced in North Carolina. And he became a Christian and got to looking in the book and talking to his grandmother, and he wrote a book. Very interesting. Most of you men would really enjoy that book. There's another book, Shepherding Your Child's Heart by Ted Tripp. And he really gets your heart. Really gets your heart. Just a passion to raise your children for the Lord and to wrap them up around your heart and keep them there. And then there's another one on Tips for Training Children, something like that, Red Bradley. And to me, that's the real nuts and bolts, sisters. That's probably the one, unless you just like to read. You probably have your children's heart, and it's in your heart. But that book is really the nuts and bolts of raising children. And if you want a book to read, I think I would highly recommend that one. If this morning we could fast forward time for 15 years real quick, I think it would really increase the burden on our heart. I see Scott here with his little children. Add 15 years. What kind of children do you hope to have? And I'm not just talking to Scott, all of you. What kind of children do you hope to have in 15 years? And whose responsibility is it to get there? And it won't be done on spare time. It's going to take prime time. It's going to take a lot of effort. Psalm 58:3 says, they go astray as soon as they're born. You know, there's some teaching that children are born, they're basically good, and they learn evil. I'm not going to go into the theology of all that. But we birthed 10 children, and the Lord gave us two more. They didn't have to be taught to be bad. They came kicking and screaming and hollering whenever they didn't get what they wanted. They'd lie, cheat, and steal. And they had to be taught to go otherwise. It's our responsibility. I heard a preacher saying, it was so strong that I cringe, but he said, our children are born with both feet headed to hell. And it's our responsibility to turn them around and head them towards heaven. They're eternal souls. They did not ask to be born into this world. And so I beg you, dads, get a vision. Get a vision of your children, and down the road, what kind of children do you want? And what is it going to take to get there? You know, we can have vision for our business, and pretty easy to know what we want, and well, let's get some goals. How are we going to get there? Let's have that with our children. Make it a priority. No amount of material gain will substitute for a godly father. You know, what God has given is the most valuable gift that you can expect on earth, is the birth of that little child. You know, if we have an animal, we used to milk cows, and occasionally we'd have a cow that was just more than we could handle. And you know what we did with it? Sale barn. Get rid of it. Do you get the point? We're raising these eternal gifts. It's not like an animal. It's not like an old car. If it gets too much trouble, we just swap it out and get another one. We're going to have to make investments. I thought of Abraham in chapter 18, Genesis. Abraham sat at the door of his tent. The very next chapter, you know where Lot was. He sat in the gates of the city. God said, I know that Abraham will command his children after him. And you can see such a difference between Abraham and Lot. Dads, be home with your family. It must be a priority. Deadbeat dads find reasons to go away from home. Dads with a vision look for ways to get home. Home should be a place of refuge for us. And if it's not, then dads, we're responsible to make sure that it is. Find a way to get home. And be the dad that your children need. One of the best gifts you can give your children is to love their mother. Moms, consider what you're dealing with. Your input will impact children's future and a large bearing on eternity. You have such a responsibility, such a privilege. And God bless you. I'm sure you're taking that privilege and responsibility, but to hold those little children on your lap, to read them stories, to talk about God, to put their little minds centered on God. You have so much influence. And I think there's another thing that's changed in the last 50 years. In the last 50 years, at least where I came from, we were a lot more ag-based and even a dairy farm that, you know, dad and the boys go out and milk cows, come in, everybody eat breakfast together. And then the day goes on. Maybe family devotion then, and the day goes on. And now, so many things are different. It's, you know, men have to go to work before the children are out of bed and don't get home until almost supper time. What am I saying? That puts a lot more responsibility over here on you. And I think that's just the way it is, whether it should be that way or not. And so, moms, God bless you. And I would say if you feel frustrated and almost flying apart, there is a way out. Disciplined children are content children. And children with clear lines and no consequences of disobedience are happier children. Mom and Dad, commit to working together to train your children. Be like Samson's parents. They said, how shall we order the child? How shall we raise the child? And look in the scripture. There's a number of verses in Proverbs that I just want to read over briefly. I want a Bible base for the message. Proverbs 13:24. Today we have postmodern psychological parenting, and you'll read about that in John Roseman's book, Parenting by the Book. And these verses from Proverbs are not in harmony with PPP, postmodern psychological parenting. I'm going to just read a couple of verses, 13:24. He that spareth his rod hateth his son. But he that loveth him chasteneth him betimes, or literally early. He doesn't wait until late in life. 22:15. Foolishness is bound in the heart of a child, but the rod of correction shall drive it far from him. 23:13. Withhold not correction from the child, for if thou beatest him with the rod, he shall not die. Thou shalt beat him with the rod and shall deliver his soul from hell. in 29:15. The rod and reproof give wisdom, but a child left to himself bringeth his mother to shame. Again, I say these verses are not in harmony with postmodern psychological parenting. But I think it does bring out the truth that it's more than intellectual training is needed. Intellectual training will not change behavior. This postmodern psychological parenting came along about the time modern man invented ways for birth control, which I would say usually on the bottom of the list of reasons for not wanting children is selfishness. And I would not say always. But the concept of the world, where one's a plenty, two's too many, and three's not allowed, that concept is not. Psalmist says, happy is he who has his quiver full of them. And then these parents never figured out the key to happiness in life. They thought the reason for their frustration was because they didn't have what they wanted. There was a generation that came through the Great Depression of the 30s, were raised in hard times, and they did without. And a lot of them were from large families, and a lot of them knew what it was to be hungry. They knew what hard times were and had to scrimp and to save. And so by the time they came along and got married, they decided, number one, that we don't want many children. And number two, we were going to give them what they want. We weren't going to put them through the hard times like they were put through. And it's happened over and over that they poured it on the child. They gave him everything they wanted. And they raised a very selfish child that never had the backbone and the strength, never even financially, never had the grit to get in and scrimp and save and work and never accumulated anything like mom and dad did. And basically these children, since it was only one, two, maybe at the most, they were able to live off of the momentum of dad and mom. What is our goal this morning? I think it should be to have children grow to be well-balanced, emotionally stable, mature adults. But what will it take? It's going to take four things coupled together. And I'm going to write it up on the board just to help us remember it. Maybe I'll make it like a box. It's going to take love. It's going to take discipline. It's going to take teaching. And it's going to take training. And these must be hooked together, just like these trains that come by here. I get all mixed up where I'm at. Up there I see the track. And if those cars aren't hooked up together, you know what happens. And if these aren't all tied together, you're going to come up short. If you dismiss one, you will not get what you want. So let's talk about love a little bit. We read the verse, he that spareth his rod hateth his son, but he that loveth him chasteneth him at bedtime. I mean betimes. Early is what he's saying. Not waiting until the child is half grown. I want to talk about a false concept of love. One of the false concepts of love today is that love will constantly try to make that child happy. I don't know if... Yeah, I don't know what your thinking is. I'm just letting my mind run. and my mouth run. But I talked about parents that did that, thought to give the child everything they wanted, constantly make them happy. And parents, you will be much happier, and the children will learn to be much happier if you don't try to do that. I've seen parents with the guessing game, and they're little, and I don't know what to call them. I sometimes just call them Johnny for illustration's sake, and we have a Johnny in our congregation, and he gets tired of being talked about, he said. So I'll just say Shorty. And little Shorty sitting to the table and squawking. Maybe I'll say he's 18 months. And he's just yelling. And so parents, well, do you want milk? Do you want tea? Do you want up? Do you want down? Do you want mama? Do you want daddy? And you can go on that guessing game to try to make them happy. And I know there are particularly times that you don't know what is the trouble with the child. And I would say, make sure that the essentials are taken care of. If he's hungry, or if he's, you know, needs a diaper change, or, and then you will do yourself a favor to be the leader of that little one. And I believe that as parents, we know what they need. And instead of the guessing game to try to figure out finally to what's going to make them happy, if you tell them what they need, give them what they need, and see to it that they become happy with what they need. False concept of love is to constantly try to make them happy. The second thing, the false concept of love, is that love does not inflict pain. I don't know how many of you remember the smallpox vaccination, but they hurt. Well, it injected a small amount of smallpox in a sterile, sound medical condition, and it hurt. Was that love to inflict that pain? Well, sure it was. Well, since an undisciplined life is a very unpleasant experience, then discipline should be like that smallpox vaccine. It's a small amount of a painful infliction under a sound and loving home environment and family conditions. Love by the Scripture, and we know it works. We've seen it work. It does inflict pain. Love, teaching, discipline, and training work so closely. It's hard to just talk about one of them. But I would say that when you use discipline, there should be equal amounts of love to go with it. In other words, there are always times that, you know, a child goes through a spell that you wonder, will he ever learn? And you have to use more discipline. I believe at the same time you should use equal amounts of extra love. I'm not going to talk a lot more about singling them out. But I will say that love without discipline is a fiasco. And I would say that harsh discipline without love will bring children who are emotionally unstable and unbalanced. And it's a wrong concept of God. I talked about that earlier this week, about children's concept of God usually is from their first concept of their father. But I would say that basically the harsh discipline without love, and I'm talking in a generality, is probably not near as much our problem as it was in yesteryears. But today maybe it's a great, and I'm sure it still can happen, and it can be happening. I'm not going to dismiss it altogether, but I wonder if more of our problem today is, you know, we just want to show them love and give them everything that they want. We want to keep them happy. I wonder. Today we need training that's coupled with discipline. Society knows how to train animals better than they do children. I heard of an example of two that lived in a house, and this is probably in John Roseman's book. There were two that lived in a house, and one of them was very respectful. He would be quiet. He was well-disciplined, obedient, would not go on the road. And the other one in the house was mean, was very disrespectful. He was all kinds of problems at school, and Dad took up for him. And guess what? The first one was the family dog. He was respectful, obedient, wouldn't go on the road. I didn't say it was two people in the house. I just said it was two in the house. Society today knows better how to train animals than they do children. I believe that obedience training is probably the most important part of reaching our goal. They tell us that children remember 10% of what they hear. Are you with me? Children remember 10% of what they hear, 50% of what they see, 70% of what they said, and 90% of what they did. It brings me to the point that intellectual training will not do it. You can talk to that little 2-year-old until you're blue in the face and frustrated, and try to explain, try to reason with them, try to help them understand, and you just think, well, maybe one day they'll wake up and understand it and be good because they understand it. And it won't happen. Also, you can try controlling children by screaming, and it'll never work. Somebody said that's like trying to control a car by the horn. It won't work. And if you're training by raising your voice, your child will learn very quickly that you don't mean it the first time. I had an experience, and actually it was the same little boy I talked about last night, about in that second or third grade, that had to tell everybody that he already had a girlfriend. I was taking this crew home, and I think it was before I had the bus patrol with me. And they were noisy. And what can you do to community children that are noisy? And so I spoke and tried to get over their racket. I spoke again. And I had to raise my voice the third time to try to get up over theirs. And this same little boy says, "Mr. Seam, you mean it this time?" You see, he was trained. I heard of another story of a boy that was visiting a friend, and they went upstairs to go to bed, and Dad hollered up, "Shorty, time to go to sleep." And the visitor wanted to be quiet, and Shorty wanted to keep talking and having a good time. And it wasn't long until Dad raised his voice again, hollered up the steps, "Time to be quiet." Shorty keeps right on, the same conduct. The third time, Dad let it roar. Shorty says, "Okay, he means it this time." He was trained. He knew. And we can do that on the first time. Imagine training an animal by yelling at it, and how far would you get? If you wanted to, my mind goes back to training our cows in the old days, back when I was at home yet, and trying to get those young stock into the barn, and we'd do all kinds of things to coax them in. And if we would have just yelled at them, you can imagine the fiasco. And I want to emphasize that children can learn that a quiet yes means yes, and a quiet no means no. And it should be, I think the goal should be where that is as forceful as yelling at them. Obedience training does not need to wait until you can reason with the child. We talked about reasoning already. Somebody said that most babies are spoiled by 6 months. And I'm going to stand sideways on that one. If you shoot back, maybe you'll miss. But I give it as a thought. And one of the things I noticed was when we go to Honduras, and you go back, I mean, where it's just, you know, adobe huts and dirt floors and filth and just, I mean, children just from this high, that high, that high, I mean, just right up, and there's no way mother can just coo and cuddle over each one of those little children. And I noticed that maybe the barely 3-year-old, 2-year-old maybe 3, can have the little 6-month-old, and they're sitting out in the yard, and she's just sitting there holding her. And the little baby's quiet. And I made that observation that they just seem to be a lot more content than our babies. And I talked to another brother who's been in other countries, and he said, yeah, I've noticed the same thing. It's because they have learned not to expect anything. Now, don't take it, you know, out on left field that way. But what happens? What happens to the six-month-old when you're sitting at the table and he grabs the plate? What do we do? Well, we push the plate back. What happens when they get old enough to just reach up and grab the flowers or the CD player or whatever? We push it back, right? Well, we're just teaching that child that anything within reach you can have. Instead of child-proofing, instead of house-proofing the child, we're child-proofing the house. And so just, you know, teach to keep things back. Well, that one could be carried too far, but just consider it. I believe that there can be a little training on those little things when they reach to grab things at a lot earlier age. And of course, that doesn't take the same type of discipline that it does when they are 1.5, 2 years old. But don't wait for your obedience training until you can reason with the child. When the pain, an infliction of pain, the child can learn. And of course, that comes on different levels. I had to think about our wood stove and think about how children can learn at an early age. And how much better you are to start early. He that loveth his child corrects him betimes or early. Our wood stove is just one of those old stoves made in the late 70s. I think it's 3/8 steel without an extra jacket on it. And it gets hot. And we have had very, very few. I can't even think of any major problem we had with the child getting burned. There were a couple times that, you know, they hit it and it ouched a little bit and they cried. But I don't remember of any child doing it the second time. Do you get the point? Children can put 2 and 2 together. I think it was my father-in-law said that a child is ready to start receiving discipline when they can make an association. In other words, when you give them a comb and they go to their hair, they're associating things. Or if they drop something off of the high chair and they look to see where it went, they're putting 2 and 2 together. And you're ready to start those little disciplines. And right at first, a little smack on the hand. There's a little bit of pain. Startle them. And it is rewarding. Just recently, one of our daughter-in-laws said that she was having such trouble. Child wanted to reach up and mess with the tape player. And she consistently went, and finally, she saw the child reach up, and hand in the air, stopped. Looked around, where's mom? Pulled the hand back down. Boy, that makes you feel like you finally hit a home run. Obedience training takes time and a strong will in the parent. It takes consistency. Consistency. That's one of the most important things. And my old grandpa Hart, I'm just glad God gave us children. We were young. I watch our children and some of the things. And I saw that little grandson. He's such a sweet, cute little thing. And he reached up and he got those flowers. And his mama told him, don't. I mean, they were at grandpa's. And right away, she just quietly got him up and went off and whatever she did with him. And my heart's like, oh. But you know what? Those are the happy children that know where their lines are. And that a quiet no means no. Means don't do it. And a yes, a quiet yes, means it's the thing to do. I see the clock is beating me by a long ways. Do things for the sake of training. Now this is another one I want you to think about. But I think that little toddler running around, you should give it a little command. And maybe it's nothing but come to Dad. Now, what do you want? Well, you want to see how effective your training has been. And if that child when it comes to Dad, you probably want nothing at that point because you're training. Just scoop that little child up, give them a big hug, tell them you love them, turn them down, and they're happy. You've just given a little test. And maybe a 3-year-old, it's go get a book. Or it's just some little thing to do. And I want to tell you something else that I cringe when I hear parents. Maybe you want a book. You want them to go get a book. And you ask the question, will you go get me a book? What if the child says, I don't want to? Well, you've asked the question. They just told you they didn't want to. It's a little bit like when we ask somebody to have a topic at church. I've found if you ask them if they want to have a topic, they got the right to say they don't want to. And if you ask your children if you want to get a book, well, they might not want to. But if you want them to get a book and you want them to learn to follow orders, loving commands, just tell them what you want them to do. You're smart enough to know what they need to do. And so it's time to pick the toys up. You ask them, do you want to pick up the toys? Well, don't give them that option. Okay, let's pick up the toys. Instead of the questions. I encourage having sitting sessions with the small children. And you can teach them, it's a lesson anyway, to be quiet in church. I know your children are doing good. I think you are doing better than back home, but maybe nobody will be listening to this tape. But it's good. I mentioned the other night about how you mothers have such a hard time finding that quiet time because nights are stressful and when you have to get up, you're still tired. And maybe you're saying, boy, you're just so idealistic, I can't handle it. And that's okay. But, you know, in the morning, once you get the children off to school, maybe the floor swept and a few little things put away, and maybe about 10:30, you say, okay, children, let's come to the living room. And those preschoolers, they're sure sitting mighty sweet here. Could we have a little session at home like that? They sit down and you hold the little infant and say, we're going to just be in church right now and we're just going to be quiet. And then you can have your little time to read a few scriptures. And then what happens when you come to church? You've been having these lessons. It's like, I like to think about church as being the test. And if you fail a test, it's not the end of the road. You're not at a crisis. You just need to go back and have some more lessons. I think it's good to teach them that they can be quiet without the toys. And without... At least I never remember my mother dragging a big bag with anything from Cheerios to Legos to trucks and cars and... I guess we just had to learn to be good for nothing. Without the distraction method. If your child yells and screams in church but quiets when you stand up, you probably have work to do. I have seen, observed otherwise. Didn't really hear a whole lot out of a child, but when he stood up, he knew where he was going. And I heard one minister say that they should learn quick that they're more comfortable inside than they are outside. Again, the more you train, the less discipline it will take. But it still takes discipline. And so many times, I'll go back just a little bit. But I think I've seen parents that try to remove anything from a child's little selfish nature that's going to expose that selfish nature. You know, we just want to isn't that kind of human for us parents? We want to just avoid those little conflicts, and so you're busy up there brushing things out of the front of it, where that little selfish nature will kind of have a smooth path, basically get what he wants. It brings, a little quiet for the present. I would say there comes a time when you do your child a favor, maybe to have the little thing brushed into his way where that you can see how well you're doing at him ruling over his little selfish nature. Isn't that what needs to be broken? That little selfishness? Didn't I tell you they're so self-centered when they're brought into the world? They scream when they are hungry and when their diaper's dirty and when they don't get what they want. And somehow we're trying to turn their feet around to where they can think of others. And the sooner they can learn to be the master over their old selfish carnal nature, the better off they'll be. I want to give a few thoughts on spankings. Number one, don't wait. Parents, don't wait until the flashpoint, till your flashpoint. You should never discipline your child in anger. The world today does not understand the difference between abuse and discipline. What they understand as discipline is when you just start beating. They don't understand that discipline is a rational mind, not in anger, but with a purpose in mind. The child has done wrong, and you tell the child, you talk to the child, and then discipline is administered. Don't wait until your flashpoint. We knew that our parents would not spank us if they were angry. But I want to tell you, little children will manipulate. They'll try every card they can think of. One of my big brothers, on the way to the bedroom, looked up at our mom and said, "Mom, are you sure you're not angry?" And trying everything he could. But I want to tell you, if you're angry, that's probably more of a serious problem than whatever the child did. You get yourself under control before you can start to discipline another. Spanking should basically be done in private. I think we're all pretty much that way. We would rather have our disciplines in private. Somebody has something to scold me about, I'd much rather it wouldn't be in front of everybody else. And I think we should have that respect for our children, that we do the disciplines in private. I just emphasize training at home so you don't feel like you're in a crisis when you go to town. If something happens in the grocery store, take care of it at home. I know we do need to be careful in the times that we're living. But basically, the more you can do at home, the more you train at home, the less of those crisis moments you'll have in town. Make sure the child knows the crime. I don't think, again, you don't need to go into a lot of intellectual arguments or explaining to the children. But make sure just a simple little question, what did you do? Or what did I tell you? And then, what did you do? Now, why am I spanking you? And they know the answers to that question, and that's enough. And then administer the discipline soundly. And the child determines if your mission is accomplished or not. When you discipline that child, you can tell when you finish if the mission is accomplished or not. And it has to be hard enough to where that child's will is. It gives up its will. And I know it's difficult with maybe a big old thick diaper and jeans up over the diaper maybe. And
But I want to just tell you, the child, after you take the child and you administer the discipline, the child should be able to cry. It should need to cry for a little bit. If it was just a little fanfare, nothing got through, and the child is only yelling and screaming when you get through, you have not accomplished what you want. You've only made the child angrier. But it should be a cry, not the screaming and the yelling, but it should be from pain. Let the child cry for a little bit, and then you can tell the child, okay, now it's time to be quiet. And it shouldn't take long, and they'll get over it. And if the child sits still on your lap, and I'm a firm believer in that, and you take a child to discipline, except in rare occasions when it's maybe older, a little bit older, and I'm not putting ages to it. But if the child's old enough to spank, it should be old enough to at least sit tight beside you, Dad. And you put your arm around that child. And when the crying subsides, and the child lays his head or her head on your shoulder, especially those little children, and they lay their head there, you know it's done. The mission was accomplished. And then I like to tell the children, go wash their face. The offense is cleared, and we won't mention it again. It's done. If our children don't come under the authority of us as adults, it will head down a dark path. Children must learn to come under authority. So we need to test ourselves. Parents, test yourself, not your children. If your two-year-old doesn't respond promptly to a normal tone, come to Dad. You have work to do. If your child at any age turns around and tells you no, and I've heard that from a five-year-old not too long ago, and it's about all I can do to contain myself when that happens. You speed that, you fast forward that tape 10 years and see where you're at. If you're training your children by distraction, by the distraction method, you need help now. Your obedience to God requires that every time you give your child a reasonable command in a normal voice, you see to it that it gets done. Never ask something of your child you're not willing to see it through and to make it happen. I've known of parents already where that they were so weary. You know, I don't know what all the circumstances were, but they were tired. It was time to go home, and they knew with what they were dealing with in their children, their little ones right at that moment, that it was easier for them just to go do what needed to be done, what normally the child should have been done, should have done, than to go through that. So instead of saying, all right, go pick up the toys, the parent went ahead and did it for that time. And that is better. You don't want that as a normal, but that is better than telling the child to pick up the toys and then go and doing it yourself and let the child go run free. You have just trained that child that I don't mean what I say. You see, we're not making little Christians. You're not raising little Christians. You're just teaching them obedience and authority. And that is going to make it easier to submit to God when the time comes. You're teaching them to keep their conscience clean. You notice the difference in a child when they've done wrong. They know they've done wrong, and you take and you administer discipline. And afterwards, those eyes are just as clear. Their face is happy, and they run play, and everything is okay. You have just taught them to keep their conscience clean. You've taught them to respect and be obedient to authority. And so that way, when they come to the age when God on their heart, they have already learned the importance of obedience and keeping the conscience clean. But if they have learned to say no to your authority, it will make it much more difficult. Parents, your attitudes are usually picked up and exposed and even magnified by your children. Your attitude about authority, whether you go home and you eat roast preacher for lunch on Sunday dinner, or you talk about the leaders in the church, you talk about the school and the teachers, and as one of the things that John Roseman brings out, in his book. I hope some of you get excited enough to get to order the book and read it. But he talked about the way it was when he was a boy. They'd come home from school and talk about the teacher and how what a crazy thing happened and what the teacher did that was so... His dad would say, I want to tell you something. You're smart enough to know what the teacher wants. You'll do yourself a favor to learn that and go back there and do it. Instead of all this, oh, you poor little thing, the teacher was so unreasonable and I don't know why that teacher... Our attitude about authority is picked up, exposed, and even magnified by our children. Attitudes about leaders, about government, about neighbors, about ethnic groups, about family, about our attitude towards the rule, government laws, seat belts, car seats, and all those things that sometimes seem so ridiculous. And when children are raised by parents with bad attitudes, they usually will develop bad attitudes back about the parents. Proverbs says, my child, listen. Make sure your children are listening. Give one-on-one instruction. I think it's good to have eye contact with your children. You can see so much in children's eyes. You can see if they're clear or not. We can go back to Honduras again, and I see those little children, and you can tell at a very young age by looking in their eyes of abuse and such a... There's just nothing clear there. Look at your children. Give one-on-one instruction with them. Remember, parents, you can't lead where you're not walking yourself. Fathers, provoke not your children to anger. One of the biggest things that will make angry children is for fathers to demand a walk of life that they're not walking themselves. I want to recap just a few things. You don't have to be perfect parents to be good parents. You don't have to be, I remember an expression years ago, super mom on the block. You don't have to be a super mom or a super dad. If you have plenty of godly love for your children, where they're on your hearts, you're burdened for them, you love them, you take time for them, you can make mistakes. My parents did. We did. Plenty of it. You don't have to be perfect. Your tightest control should be when the children are young. I've seen parents get that mixed up and, you know, kind of just let the children run. And as they get older, they want to try to tighten the ropes down on them. It doesn't work. Your tightest control should be when they're young. And as they get older, you're going to have to release them. There comes a time when you have to give them back to God that gave them. Just recapping again, when you say no to your children or yes with low blood pressure, low respirations, and low volume, and you are obeyed, a major goal has been achieved. I want to emphasize, too, that little children learn to obey because of fear of consequences. Now, real briefly on that. I think it's the same way that we came to God, those of us when we gave our hearts to the Lord at an early age. You know why? I was a young boy when I gave my heart to the Lord. And you know why? I didn't want to go to hell. And that's about all I knew about it. Is that okay? Well, I think it's okay. But there came a point in time in my life when I realized it was a lot more than about not going to hell. We have a Father that loved us. His commands were for our good. Are you following the theology there? Your children are they're not going to be reasonable to where you can just explain, oh, we love you so much, this is all for your good, and no, won't you do it? And it'll never happen. They learn to obey because if they don't obey mom and dad, there are consequences, there's pain. And as they grow up, they begin to learn and understand, dad and mom do love us. It is for our good. Again, never give a command you're not willing to see through. Consistency. one of the most important ingredients for training. It is so hard and so tiring. God bless you, mothers and fathers, for being consistent with your children. Enter into your heart, into your children's world enough to touch their hearts. Do things with them when they're little, and you bounce them on their knee and give them little horsey rides and romp and roll on the floor with them. When they get a little older, it's whatever, hide and seek. Maybe it's softball. Maybe it's take them fishing. Enter into their world. Don't make them always just come into your world for your recreation and social life needs to be met. Teach your children the facts of life. And teach them young. Don't let anyone touch you. I'm just adamant about this. That you don't have to tell them a lot. But you can tell them that if anybody touches you in an inappropriate way, come to Dad, come to Mom, and come quick. You need to tell them that. Teach them the facts of life when they're in their early teens. Maybe the book, God's Will for My Body. I've used that one a number of times. By John Koblenz, sold by Christian Light. It's a good book. Also, watch your tones. And I'm almost finished. Don't be negative. You know how easy it is to... I hate to even illustrate, but I think you know how it is. And just, don't do that. Don't do that. What are you doing that for? And I told you not to do that. And just pretty soon it can just be so negative. Does anybody like that? I mean, do we like to be treated like that? And it'll make a negative child. Be respectful. Use your authority the way you would like authority to work with you. One of the times, I don't know if I can even tell the story. We got a letter from a young girl in another community, grown girl. She poured out her heart to us, a lot of hidden things in her life. And at the end of the letter, she begged me, she said, "Treat me as a daughter." In other words, be respectful. Treat me with compassion. And that's how we need to be with our children. Always keep an eye open for your children. They should not be unaccounted for long periods of time. Know where they're playing. Pop in on them when they're out. Especially others. I'm just telling you, children are not born basically good. They're born basically evil. And if you have other thoughts on that, I'm open to hear it. I'll try to listen very carefully and compassionately. But I believe children are born basically evil. Don't let them go and run and play hiding out in the woods with, you know, all the neighbor children for a long period of time. You're opening up yourself for a disaster. Remember, your children aren't bad because they do these things. They do these things because they're bad. Communicate with your children. Learn to know them. Ask about their day at school or work. Be involved. Keep their heart, because if you don't keep their heart, somebody else will find it. Answer their questions. Boy, this was a hard one for me. I'm preaching to myself. Especially those sweet girls. You know, we had six daughters, and they'd come and ask Dad something, and I hated so bad to disappoint them and tell them no. I knew they wanted yes so bad, and I would just wait, and I would just hope that maybe eventually they'll know and they'll just decide the right thing. You know, it's better to go ahead and tell them no than it is to not tell them anything. Answer their question. Guard their path. Guard their path. You know, when they're little, you didn't give them a, you know, your good scissors for cutting material. You didn't give them knives. You didn't let guns lying around because you were guarding their path. As they grow older, keep guarding their path. I think it's good for parents to have a relationship where they can check over the phones when they have their cell phones. Check the phone. I think it's good to have parental controls. Children need phones really early nowadays. And I think it's good to have parental controls. I know Verizon has... It's amazing, the parental controls. You can set a time when you don't call or text anybody except the people that you put in. You know, make sure you can put the preacher and dad and mom. And after 9:30, they don't need to be calling and texting anybody except dad or the preacher and mom. I think it's a good idea to have the phones charging out in the living room overnight. Guard their path, the reading material, who their friends are. Oh, I didn't talk anything about family devotion. I am afraid, and again, I don't know you people here at Halsey well in your family life, but it seems to me that on the broader circle, it's almost a dying art to have enough time to sit around with the family and read the Bible, have scripture, do some singing, memorize the word. Very, very important for a child in their growth. Teach the children. If we don't, somebody else will. God bless you. I see the time is here to close. I think you say you're going to close the service, right? Okay. God bless you.